get going with our next session of the morning, which is now looking at supply side perspectives. We have two speakers. We'll start with Michael Ballmer from the Switzerland. And then we were scheduled to have Hani Mamasani, but we haven't quite figured out how to clone Hani or teleport Hani. So he just has to be in multiple places at the same time. So Hani could not join us, but he is replaced by a very able Quilin Zhang, who was with Argonne National Labs and has been working very collaboratively with Hani on some of their integration work. So Quilin will present some of that work. Okay, so we'll start with Michael.
Thank you very much. Hello again. So my presentation is something like a summary of some of the points we heard from Harry and Kostas before. And since I was starting as a computational scientist years ago, and there was this kind of nerd thingy, which Kajakshausen then took over and reformed me as a transport planner, which kind of is already a special mixture. And now I'm running a company, so it's a weird combination at the moment, and probably the presentation also, you will see the different aspects. And that's the reason why I actually start with a customer point of view, and that's something which we have experienced as ETH spin-off when we're talking to customers, and customers can be public transport providers, can be public authority, but also private companies which were never getting into touch with transport planning or what is all about transport planning models. So, and the questions what arise there is, from the transport infrastructures provider, can be public or private, they're asking us questions which are kind of very specific, because that's their problem at the moment, and for the next year especially. It's all about money. It's about, so who pays for what if you build a new highway or something like that. In Switzerland, it's even more specialized because, well, when you build a highway in the canton of Zurich, and you probably know Switzerland is a tiny piece on earth, and a canton is, well, 26 cantons in Switzerland, so therefore it's really tiny. So all the others are using that highway, so which canton has to pay how much, and what does the country have to pay, so all the taxpayers, or probably should we invest into congestion charging, road pricing, and things like that, which is not that easy in Switzerland. So it's all about paying. Who pays? The other thing which we experience when we're working with public transport providers is something like, so we have a problem. There's bus bunching always at 9:30 and later from a specific bus line. What that means for them is they actually have to pay the city a fee because they do not serve, provide with the public service they promised. So they get a budget from the local authorities. They have to perform the public service, and if they produce delays and things like that, then they have to pay a fee back because they do not fulfill the task completely. And the question is, so why does that happen? Is it because they did a wrong schedule, they did something wrong on their supply side, or is it another effect, probably congestion of a bus because of a long-term construction area at the parallel road of the road of the line and things like that? If they find that out, they can say, well, it's not our fault. They put a construction area, and therefore they don't have to pay. So it's really about, it's always about this money thing. And from the zonal pricing system, they're going away from the idea that, there's fixed price from A to B, zonal by zonal. They're thinking about, so how we have to reorganize our pricing systems per zone, such that we can optimize something. Can be optimization of the turnaround, optimization of the profit, optimization of whatever. But they're asking this kind of question. And the last thing, which is very important, is nobody wants to invest in public transport infrastructure in Berlin. That's a region we're working for. But they still have to increase the number of customers. So how do they reach new customers without investing in new infrastructure to get those new customers? So they need to find other ways, something like marketing tasks and things like that, to say, oh, well, we are here, use us, you're almost there anyway, keep your car at home and use public transport. So they increase the number of customers they have. And the last thing which we are just investing right now is in car sharing stations. So there's an idea in Berlin that they put on a car sharing system organized by public as well as private providers. And the question is where to put those car sharing stations such that they reach a fair amount of customers, such it's useful in terms of accessibility, reachability and things like that, and of course to maximize their profit at the end. And the other thing which Kostas mentioned from a novel point of view is actually another customer can be the retailers, supermarkets. I always say companies with a lot of retail shops in the area. So we're discussing with companies like the Coop and the Migros, which are supermarket companies which own hundreds of locations in Switzerland, and they are asking about where are our customers, where they go to, can I grab a fair amount of potential customers which are walking by our shops and things like that. And one other thing is we want to fill up the white spots in our landscape, so where we do not reach customers yet, but of course they want to reach customers that do not already walk along another shop they already own, so it's filling up the white spots. And one sentence is really like this thing at the moment very often. It's about this carbon footprint. So some of the companies try to optimize their locations according to the carbon footprint because they want to be green, they want to be presented as a green company. And one of the things is how much emission do their own employees produce when they commute to work. So they're trying to find locations such that their employees for a specific population group can reach the work location with public transport rather than just only by car and things like that. And of course, you can have the main station of Zurich for that. That's of course a good answer for that question, but it's extremely expensive. The square meter there is immensely expensive in Zurich. So probably there are other places which are not that expensive and still produces a very nice carbon footprint. So these are the questions which we were facing last 3 months when we were talking to our potential customers. So and the last thing is what Kostas mentioned is at the end they want to have a nice movie that they understand. And I think that's cool. And at the end it's really like that if you produce a movie which has nothing to do with research, but at the end if you can show somebody something which is easy to understand, then it helps. So from the transfer planning point of view, it's what do we need? It's some kind of a person tracking. That's the word they use always, so I use it, which means something like the demographics moving around during the day by, for example, customer groups. The other thing is the time dynamic aspect, which we mentioned before already. And from the demand side and from the supply side, for car sharing stations, it's extremely important to find out what is the availability of cars at the stations, because only if there are cars, then you can have customers, otherwise you're not, you don't have any. And all those questions, especially from the retail market, it's all about a high level of spatial detail. It's not about the zone. They're not interested in the zone. They have one location, one coordinate. They're asking about those coordinates. Information about those coordinates. And from the transport planning, from the public transport point of view, it's interaction of different modes. So bus bunching, delays, so what are the interactions between public transport and private transport? And vis-a-vis, which means what you see is what you get, it's nice to have to understand what actually the model is producing. And what we were told already before we found the companies is an integrated activity-based demand and traffic simulation model can actually cope with all those aspects. So let's start with the first part is the person tracking itself. Oops. So now I'm switching as a computational scientist, and it's a little bit of a topic what Kostas said before. It's about computational issues. In principle, if you have any kind of demand modeling, can it be a four-step model, it can be an activity-based demand model, is what we almost always do is at the end we're producing origin destination matrices and feed that into an assignment process, static, dynamic assignment, whatever it is. So that's pretty simple, and what we get out of that are costs per link, are costs per route which we produce from each origin to destination, which you can feed up into the demand modeling process if you want to. Probably we don't want to, but usually we have to do that. Sooner or later we find out that we have to do that. Carnagel says the upper part, usually the mental layer, and the lower part the physical layer, but the route calculation is actually more a mental layer, as Harry already mentioned before, than a physical layer. But we start with that. And the computational time, the complexity for one mode, one group, and static is very simple. So we need some time to do the demand modeling, and we need just a few minutes to do the static assignment process. So it's very low. If we have more need, for example, more modes to calculate, then we have more matrices. So therefore, we have to do the assignment four times for different modes, for example. So therefore, the time spent to calculate the assignment increases a little bit because there are more matrices to cope with. So, but we want to do something dynamic, then it's getting a little bit tricky. Usually you split it up in different time bins, or the morning peak, the evening peak, and the time between. So you have more matrices again, so therefore you have to do more assignment again. So, but we're still not at the person level of detail. So let's try something else. What we have to do usually in this kind of modeling, you split that into OD groups, which have different different ways how to behave, so therefore you have to split it up, and you want to calculate the resulting costs for each OD group again to feed back into the modeling process. So you have to have even more origin destination matrix, and it's getting steeper and steeper because it's something like an exponential function, because it multiplies the number of groups again. And then if you want to have some personalized demographic movement information, then you have M population growth and it explodes completely. So there's absolutely no chance to do that anymore. Time goes to infinity and data handling is actually horrible. So that's from this separate thing to use demand modeling and assignment, it's something like, from a computational point of view, at one point it doesn't work anymore. On the activity-based demand idea and the simulation idea, we just do a small little trick. We take the route calculation and put it into the mental layer. So the calculation, as Harry said before, is part of the demand modeling process and not of the assignment process anymore. So instead of that, we just execute the activity-based demand in a simulation model. So therefore, you produce for each of your synthetic individual an activity schedule, a plan, including the routes, execute them, then calculate each individual share of costs for each individual, and then redo the demand modeling process again according to those individualized costs. So from the computational perspective, it's more on the activity-based demand modeling side and highly dependent on the number of agents, which grows somehow linear to the area we have. We talk about 80 million people for this huge area around Los Angeles. We have 7.5 million people in Switzerland, 5.5 million people around Berlin. We're probably talking somewhere about 80 million people for all of Germany, but something like grows linear in space, the number of people, but not the number of matrices. That grows exponentially if you want to split it up in different groups. So this is something which we can handle. And from the complexity point of view, the agent-based simulation just needs to perform the task. So therefore, there's not much cost to, not much time to spend to calculate the simulation if you have different person groups or different mode groups or different origin and destination groups. No, we just have the agents and their activity-based demand. So that's things that are stable. And at one point, you reach this part where the complexity shows you that you rather should do this completely integrated process instead of splitting up things with matrices. So that's the part which helps to have these different types of groups, moving groups which you want to simulate, analyze, and refeed into the demand modeling process again about their personal share of costs. You can handle that in this activity-based demand and simulation environment. The other thing is the dynamic simulation. It's just a small movie from should start. Probably should not integrate PowerPoint presentations and movies. That's a real integration problem. That's probably the harder one. So that thing should move because we're talking about time, but it does not. So if it would move, then you will see the clock over there, which really moves around. And the idea behind that is that the simulation moves in time continuously, in seconds, in some seconds or something like that. It doesn't matter that the time has just to be continuous, that you can do analysis over it on specific time bins. Because if you want to do open time analysis for a shop somewhere in the Alps of Switzerland, this shop will be closed from 11:45 to 2:30 during noontime. And that's the part which want to be analyzed or what wants to be excluded. For a shop in Zurich, it has opened from 7:00 in the morning to 8:00 in the evening, continuously. So that's the part which you want to analyze for that shop. So you're completely flexible with the time bins you analyze. You should not analyze 1 second because that's statistically completely irrelevant. But the way you can aggregate the time on the simulation outcome is flexible, and that's the important thing about it. The other thing which we heard from Kostas is the spatial level of detail. In this simulation environment, it's all based on the complexity of a person. So the person with their numbers of activities, with the numbers of trips, and the mods they use, and scales linearly with the number of agents you have in your system. So therefore, you don't need to care about zones anymore. You just need to take care that agents go there where they should go according to the base data, the analysis you have to reproduce the outcome what you experience from your survey data, from your base data. So you're completely flexible with the way you work with the data. If it's as Kostas said, on a coordinate level of detail, or if you have aggregated information because you don't have anything else, and then you can disaggregate it or distribute it inside a zone using additional detailed information like building information from OpenStreetMap or things like that. Whatever you do, you can work on coordinate level of detail for all the activities and for all the public transport stops and, for example, also for car sharing stations. So accessibility and reachability is part of the model and not as an external input from the user via connector links. So the connection between demand and traffic assignment is done according to the accessibility on coordinate level of detail. From the network point of view, from the infrastructure point of view, it's the network links which gives you the resolution. So if you have just a planning network with some links, well, then transport planning information, traffic information cannot be higher than that resolution. If you use navigation networks, well, then the resolution is higher, of course. So the next thing is the interaction of modes. Let's see if that one works. So about agent learning is never import movies into presentations. Okay, then by words. Actually, I expected that. That happens half of the time.
It happens to everybody.
It's horrible. The last movie I have actually is not important into the presentation, so that one hopefully will work. So passing congestion. As I said, it's on public transport providers. It's getting more and more important to have this interaction between the different modes to find out if they produce, if they are the cause of a problem they have, or if it's an external cause which produces that problem they have. And therefore, it's really money we're talking about there. And in this simulation, you would have seen that a bus in the METSIM queue model is moving around the streets and also getting into congestion because of cars using the same streets there. So, but it's not there. So at the end, this is about this VisiWig thing. And this one hopefully works. So this is just the movie which we presented usually at the beginning of a presentation when we talk to customers which have no clue about transport planning, but they have this problem about customers, potential customers, retail location optimization, and things like that. And what we show here is actually just the level of detail that you can actually zoom in into a system and see the greater area of Berlin, and then starting visualize the activities during the night when dark blue, most of them are still at home, and every time something flashes out, an activity starts, and around 6 o'clock, Berlin wakes up, and people go to work, and people go to education. You see the universities, the big spots are the universities in Berlin, the small pink spots are the other schools, like primary and secondary schools inside of Berlin. You see the different densities according to activities they perform in those areas. So you can zoom in and have a higher level of detail. You can present them that it's directly connected to the demand, to the traffic they produce when they want to go from one activity to the next one. So this integration of the demand and the simulation process is there. And if it's there, you can actually analyze them according to their to your personal customer group if you want to. For example, the young people between 24 and 40. And you can also analyze them to other custom group if you have that kind of demographics or social demographic inside the model. So this is a way to analyze things. For example, this is the number of employed people. So in Berlin, it's a little bit lower than in Zurich. But you can have this kind of groups there. On the other hand, everything of that is derived from the activity-based demand. So you can pick up one agent and see what is the activity-based demand when he's just performing that in the simulation. And you can visualize the public transport buses when they buses and trams and subways when they are moving around, when they disappear at bus stops and then appear again, when they pick up people. You can measure how many people enter those buses and leave those buses. You can analyze that then according to a specified line where you probably have some problems with that. You can analyze how they move around, and on the other hand, you can analyze who are using those buses. For example, if you want to know the catchment area of that bus line, you just pick all the agents which someone uses that bus line during the day and visualize their locations as we did at the beginning, and then zoom out and see something like the catchment area of those bus, including the activity types. So, and that kind of thing is very nice to explain because it's something which you experience from reality somehow. If it's then real, that's something else. But it looks like that you already seen that outside. So you have some kind of intuitive feeling what that thing produces. So that was the first part. This was more on this. We are running now a company for 1 year and we have some experience. And the last part is just a small thing about it, which of course I did not do the research, but Konrad Meister did it. And there was this topic about stochastic user equilibrium. When we see what a stochastic user equilibrium is, well, actually what I was talking about was results and one iteration. That's the thing which I was focusing here. And here we are doing the whole iteration process. And if you do an iteration process, you want to have a result somewhere. You want to know now we can stop. Now that's something which we can work with. Now that's the result. We know that this stochastic user equilibrium is something that we say that no user believes that he can improve his travel time or his generalized cost. And operational on the aggregated flow means, we produce traffic flow from each OD pair, which is somehow derived from a choice distribution of, let's say, a feasible choice set. And the feasible choice set, again, is something pre-processed to find out according to a definition of generalized cost. For an agent-based SDE, it's the focus on the other side. So it's about the agent itself and how that agent perceives his situation and what he can actually do with it. And Kai Nagel and Gunnar Flötterud defined it as the follows, that they actually draw from a systematic state distribution such that it will be regenerated distribution again. Or in other words, is so if they have generated somehow by themselves a set of possible plans, of possible routes, of possible activity schedules, They can choose one probabilistically, and nothing changes anymore in the system that much for each of the agent itself. And Konrad just used that sentence and made it operational inside the MedSim context, where he just defines a number of agents which should perceive that they cannot be improved anymore. And those percentage can vary from 95% to 97%. And if that percentage of agents actually cannot improve their daily plans anymore, then for themselves they are in a equilibrium. So, and what you find out on an example scenario in MedSim is, what we always did in the last year was looking at those curves down there, where we see what is the average utility, average score, average fitness of the performed activity, activity-based demand for each agent, and looking at the average, at the worst and at the best. And if something like that happened, that it kind of looks like stable, then we stop around, let's say, 100 or 150 iteration, because not that much changes anymore. Konrad just measured at each iteration for all the agents which changed their plan according to times or according to routes, or just choose one from their generated plan set randomly or probabilistically, if they, in the next iteration, improved their score or not. And if that improvement does not happen anymore for, let's say, 97.5%, then we are in a stochastic user equilibrium. And in this case, if we look at the red curve, which means all the agents, this 97.5% happens first time somewhere here. So we're talking about 200 or 220 iterations you have to perform until you find that. Before that, there's still a certain percentage of agents which still can improve their scores, their utility, according to the perception they have from the last iteration. The nice side effect about that is the two things is, first, the agents generate their choice set by themselves during the optimization process. You do not do that as a pre-process according to some generalized cost function. And that side effect produces another thing which is quite nice. If you generate root choice set in this case, what could happen is, in your root choice set, this kind of root can actually be part of your choice set because of the generalized cost function you use. And the difference of that root and that root is not that much, and you have not much other variations, so that could be part of your choice set. In an agent-based context, this route can only happen if you initialize that for an agent at iteration zero. If you define it, the first one you have to try out is that one, and then it's part of his choice set, and which probably he will throw away after some iteration. But if you don't predefine that, that kind of route will never occur in an agent-based choice set generation environment. Let's call it like that, because you have to have congestion here, that one is much takes much longer than this one over there. And if you initialize it with free speed routes, then that thing will not happen. Okay, that sounds pretty cool, and I think I like those investigation Konrad Meister did, and he has done his PhD some months ago, and the PhD paper is there, and there's also the link on the presentation. It's pretty interesting. It's chapter 2, but there are still open questions, of course. So the first thing is what is a suitable share? Is it 97.5%? Is it 90%? Is it 100%? So it's completely open. We just try it out. We have no clue. Yeah, you can distribute it around. There's absolutely no clue if we always reach this kind of defined stochastic user equilibrium in an agent-based environment. It looks like it does, but we have no clue about that. And since the relaxation process itself produces these choice sets for the plant, is that suitable? Does that make sense, or is it just some artifact which are produced? There are actually two opinions, so half of the MedSim user think that's a useful way to do it, and the other half think is, I'm not sure what we're doing here. So it's completely open. So that was it, and there are the links for the movies, which I just showed you one of those. So all of them are publicly available, and the paper, which is publicly available, and also that one. So thank you very much.
Questions for Michael.
Yeah. Hi, the model that you showed, the one that you showed the video for that worked, how have you validated that kind of model? It seemed to me you need to have data both from the demand side and also maybe something else like, I don't know, cell phone data or something to get an idea of how people are traveling around. Yeah.
So from the validation data, the first ones which we always use also in aggregate models are a counting station. Since we are working for the public transport company in Berlin, so we also get counting stations for all the passenger counts, I have to say, for various transport lines. So we validated and calibrated the model according to those two. We also use from the travel survey data they perform in Berlin every 5 years. We have the travel time distribution according to demographic, social demographic groups, as well as on different regions of the area. We roughly compare that also with them, roughly because some of them just the sample was then just too small for a group outside of Berlin.
Transit rider surveys you're talking about?
Something like that. It's a one-day survey about 30,000 households, which were asked at a specific day what kind of travel they performed there, which is called the SLV or MID in Germany, and in Switzerland is the microsensors of travel demand. So that's also what we validated. And what we partially did is a little bit of validation according to catchment areas of huge shopping centers. For just a few shopping centers, we had kind of information of their catchment area and compared that with our model, but it's just a few points. It's not a really exhaustive validation and comparison.
I was wondering, for example, you showed things like the number of adults in a certain age group, you know, traveling by a certain point.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure which of those data sets you'd actually get that from, or whether you might need to, you know, consider like, you know, cell phone data or something like that that would actually give you, you know, you know which people are actually doing that. I know some of that might come from the survey data you were talking about.
Some of them come from the survey data. And actually, GPS data, cell phone tracking data, and all that are great data to validate the model, because then you cannot calibrate it according to some slash hammer you have. You actually have to change the behavioral model behind that to fit those data. And the more you have, the better your model you can calibrate, and that would be a fine thing. Usually, it's quite hard to get those data. I'm surprised. So at the moment, I'm collecting them by myself because nobody gives me some to play around, but it's hard to get good GPS data sets. Yeah.
I have a mathematical question about the convergence when you have those graphs shown. Yeah, this one.
Yeah.
I had been under impression until this point that you are talking about route choice. This is only dimension. Now, what is fixed, what is...
Here in the title is, in this case, in this example, in the METSIM model, the agents can replan their times, so departure times and activity durations, as well as their routes. So that was the example scenario Konrad Meister did in his...
So everyone has a sequence of activities, so destinations are fixed.
Yeah, exactly.
But the temporal dimension can be changed, right?
Yeah, and the routes.
So how... But then the previous definition of equilibrium that you give is about route choice. It doesn't include this dimension.
No, actually, this definition is suitable for all choice dimension. So it can be route choice, time choice, a secondary location choice, primary location choice, activity chain choice, and everything together. Because it's the perspective of an agent, and their plans is the complete description of your daily schedule, of your daily demand, including all space dimensions.
So do you have a measure like an overarching utility of the entire plan, that you...
Once again,
so you need a measure, something that gives you utility for the entire daily plan.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So there's a measurement based on the Vickrey model, which was extended and adapted by Kanagel and David Kharipa. Which we call the Kharipa-Nagel utility function, which measure the success rate of a daily activity, of an executed daily activity plan.
Okay.
And this one is just the example when we allow two space search dimensions, which is routes and times, and the rest we stay fixed, just in this scenario. In the dissertation, he also did that for the real world scenario, and in there, as far as I remember, it's roots, times, and secondary look and mode choice. Sorry, roots, times, and mode choice.
But again, technically, every point here when we're moving, are you replaying all people or just a certain predetermined sample of them?
They're all agents in the system. So the red line defines all agents, and the red line up there defines all agents which improve their utility in the next iteration, and therefore are not, as the definition says, not in an equilibrium state.
Okay.
And the other lines are actually just the shares of the violet line is the share of agents which changed only their routes in the previous iteration, and then with those change of routes, improve their daily utility. The other ones, the blue ones, are they only changed the times in the previous iteration, and therefore it improved the utility. And the big red line is all of them, and the green line is the one we just select from their choice set of plans, one of them according to a probabilistic draw. Thank you, a draw. Yeah, from their choice set.
So is it a probabilistic choice or rule-based? Because what is puzzling, if you have in reality kind of probabilistic choice, there is like billions of different activity patterns. So
mm-hmm.
no chance, if you just plan, all
mm-hmm.
of them will change in this sense.
Yeah.
If it's a sequence of, so how do you ensure you have a large percentage of people repeating?
Mm-hmm.
So probably using a different technique, it's not a probabilistic choice here. It's probably something rule-based.
Each agent in each iteration have just a certain amount of plans in their choice set and pick one of them. Bad plans get removed and new plans get added to the system. So during the optimization process, your choice set actually changes during the time. You generate new plans, new patterns. Keep those patterns for a while until they get really bad, if they never perform and then get thrown away because they have a bad utility. At the same time, you produce new ones. So the number of the choice set size per iteration is the same, but the choice, the elements of the choice set vary from iteration to iteration.
Okay, so it's basically per your paper you published like around 2009, right, where we define the score of each plan.
Yeah, the score, which is the utility function, that's a Kharipa-Nagel utility function, yeah. Yeah, we called it also score because that comes from computational science. Yeah.
I would just like to make one note that those nice convergence statistics might be largely a consequence of the way how you generate those plans. It doesn't really mean that the system goes to any way of equilibrium, just the way how you set all these dynamics.
That's absolutely true. That's a good point you asked. You mentioned this. Just a simple example, which I didn't mention, by the way, is the percentage of agent which produces a new schedule in an iteration is restricted to 20%. 10 of them changes their routes. 10 of them changes their times. If you imagine that we would say 100% of the agent per iteration changes their plan, then you will have fluctuation all over the place. You have these flip-flop effects and all that. So this one cannot stabilize, which, by the way, also in the dissertation of Conrad, he played around with that. So, of course, this one will never relax, which is, of course, true if we think about the optimization process itself. If that also means that it never relaxes if you have the wrong share or if it's just completely random, that's still open. So that's one of my questions at the end. It's not completely sure what's happening in there. it just looked promising. And the weird thing about that is we did that all the time, and we were looking only at those curves below there for many years. And now we are looking also at those curves up there, which says, okay, there's something else happening in there. So it's an improvement, and it has some systematic behind that. But what it really means, the choice set generated by the agent by themselves, by variation and mutation of an existing plan, it's open. It's completely open. So I cannot answer that, you know, it works. Yes, there's some error in it.
Can you estimate approximately how many choices are available at any given time?
You can set it by yourself. This one, as far as I remember, you have 6 different plans in your choice set.
Okay.
That's the number of plans per agent.
Okay. So let's go ahead. So, Quilling Zhang, along with Hani Mamasan.
Good morning, everyone. So here I, on behalf of Hani, because he yesterday, before I jumped to my airplane, then I received an email said he cannot come, and then I, present for him. And fortunately, I have involved this project during my PhD study and my 1 year postdoc at Northwestern, and so I hope I can give you guys a bit of, work. So this work is for the SHARP2 project and involves several PhD students and collaborate with Peter. And and the outline of this presentation, so we try to model some key issues in the network side for the integrated model, and particularly we were looking at reliability, pricing, and the user heterogeneity in the dynamic equilibrium framework. And here are we going to, talk about the challenges and how we deal with these kind of challenges, and we apply this model for the large scale network and the New York network. And the motivation, so why we need an integrated model, because this is why we come here, and I do not want to, cause time on that part. And so here we now want to address the behavior side. We know all the demand modeling side, you're very flexible, you address, very flexible behavioral side. But in the network assignment side, it's not well addressed for the behavior side. So how to respond to congestion, interventions like pricing, information, and management activities. So essentially for the 3 key objectives, mobility, reliability, and sustainability. So the behavior how to support the strategic and the operational planning decisions by agencies, especially for the ITS-related applications. And also the network model should reflect the next generation of the interventions like information-based, personalized, dynamic, predictive, and multimodal. So depend on the current technologies. And so we try to deliver the method to achieve the 6 key challenges. First, to develop advanced behavior model in the network side, especially when we want to capture the heterogeneous users. And try to address some integration issues for the network models, using so-called simulation-based micro-assignment DTA model. And we generate attributes. We do not just consider the time and the cost. We also consider reliability, how to address kind of reliability. And we try to maintain the consistency between the behavior model and the supply model, so-called equilibration. As Howard said, there's a debate on that. But for the network side, when you compare different scenarios, you have to place some consistent measure to compare, kind of policies. This is why we said we still focus, and the equilibrium framework provides such a consistent thing, so we can compare a different model, like you use Transcat, you use Transims, and you can compare because you have some criteria. And of course, you have other models. And we apply to a practical network, and we address the implementation issues. So first, we consider user behavior and heterogeneity. this kind of thing is well captured by the demand side, and but network side is not well addressed. So because we think people are different, we should address this. And this whole choice framework for our project, I believe Peter will address this this afternoon. And here I mainly focus on the, you know, the network side, which means it's model choice and the road choice part. And especially we try to talk about you know, how you know, the between the sort of the toll and the free highway alternatives. And first, with travel time reliability. Travel time reliability is manifested in that a trip maker may be willing to pay a premium or toll to achieve some, you know, greater reliability in travel time. So, and there are a lot of measures to measure travel time reliability, and we will provide how we measure that. And when you do the, you know, network side, do the path choice decisions, so you not only consider travel time, and you consider toll, you know, cost, and the travel time reliability. And when you can combine these three attributes by the value of time and the value of reliability, and you got the so-called generalized cost. And many of the current, you know, conventional traffic assignment is best for dynamic traffic that ignore this kind of heterogeneity. They just assume a constant value of time and, you know, assume homogeneous perception for this, you know, cost. And the empirical study already proved that the value time, you know, does vary, you know, significantly across the individuals. And not only the value of time, the heterogeneity exists for other attributes and the risk attitude. Like if you want to do the deployment choice, the value of schedule delay are different for different people, you know, according your, you know, your you know, your purpose. And also the value of time reliability was said, and the risk attitude. This user heterogeneity causes significant challenges in integrating the behavior model in the network simulation and assignment platform. So here's the talk about the integration issues. Here's the favorite things by Honey, actually. So what I want to see from my personal experience for the, you know, the integration model for back to 2003 when I worked as a research engineer at Beijing. We work on the Beijing Olympic, you know, comprehensive transportation planning project. So we work with PTV Germany, Martin Fallendorf, if you guys know him. So we have the so-called integrated, and also PB, you know, the late Gordon Schultz, because they have the you know, experience for the Atlanta and Olympic, and they developed the MIBPM model. So we have the whole group here. But when we do the so-called integrated model, we have the activity-based model. You know, we use VSAM, and then we use VSAM to do the assignment to 24 hours. The VSAM generated from activity change generated trip changes, and we convert to, you know, as what usually we do here, and we assignment for 24 hours, and then we use VSAM to do the simulation. So I prefer call this, you know, interface, not integration, you know, full integration. And the other thing is called, you know, you have two demand model and the supply model. You come together, said you integration. It's not. And so what is integration? Integration is like here, we said, so the key is in the, I talked to the supply side, so the simulation-based DTA, you have to have the three links. The first one, how would I address it? You know, you have to load the individual activity change, not just the flows or trips. I believe Transims also does that. And the other is you can model and assign the heterogeneous users. So you just not assume everybody, you know, the perceive to the travel time the same. You have, you know, the different perceptions. And the other is multi-scaling model. It's for both of the demand side, because when you do the plan or, you know, the choice, you know, you have long-term choice, short-term choice. And for the simulation part or assignment part, so you have different, you know, scale of choice. And also for the simulation, like for the roadside, you can down to 0.1 minutes, and if you want to capture, you know, car following and changing behavior, like, you know, 0.1 second. And but for the like, transit or subway, you know, the schedule is minutes by minutes, so you have multiple resolution. So the solution is a methodology framework is simulation based DD. For example, the NetSmart P. Of course, this is our methodology can for any things. And so you have to have a dynamic network modeling capability to represent the demand and supply dynamics along with operational measures, which in ITS with the applications. So you overcomes the limitations of conventional planning tools and provide combined network assessment and traffic simulation capability for larger scale networks. Especially when you do the assignment, you use the micro level representation of an agent in actually the individual decisions. And we use macroscopic simulation, which we try to enable the apply the practical large network. But of course, you can use very detailed simulator. And we deal with the existing network model because what Adash said, just said the existing one normally they consider constant value of time.